You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
To a new episode of Geeks at Large. I'm your host, Taylor, and I'm joined by a special returning guest, Cameron Petty.
Hi.
How's it going, Cameron?
Thanks for having me back.
No problem.
Yeah.
So basically what this episode is, we're going to get right into it, because we actually saw each other about a week and a half ago, or is it 2 weeks now, almost?
Not this last weekend, but the weekend before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're just sick of each other.
Yeah. So let's just get this over with.
This is going to be the shortest episode of
Geeks at Large. Just anxious to start things so we can get things over.
It's going
to
be like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Is this it? Are we wrapped? Okay.
We're wrapping. Okay. Cut print.
See ya in Emerald City.
Bye. Okay. Yeah, but I wanted to have Cameron on because there's a reason why, there's several reasons why there hasn't been a Geeks at Large in quite a while. Since the release of Civil War, I guess. And part of that was because I was working on a project with Cameron that I've hinted at several times during, I think, previous episodes. And, I mean, now we can totally talk about it, which was our Kickstarter comic book Skeleton Bay Detective Agency. And basically it was the Kickstarter, which aimed low, you know, it was... It's like 550 was our original goal.
So what it was is that it's a preview book, and so it's a small, you know, originally planned as just like a black and white 12-page little mini comic. And so yes, we aimed small, mostly just to print a couple copies for this convention we went to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the bulk of this episode is. We're going to talk about our experiences at this year's Heroes Con, which it will be different from last year. Like last year I did one with, Megan and Michaela, my friends. We went to, Heroes Con 2015 as basically just attendees, just kind of get a feel for the show and what it's about. And this one is completely different because we tabled this year. And what I want to do for an episode is not necessarily like, here's a laundry list of shit we did, you know, like here's who we met and stuff. But it's like, we'll have a little bit of a mix of that, talk about some experiences and also just kind of offer advice for people. Hopefully we have listeners out there that want to table at conventions and.
Yeah. For kind of the first things we learned. Newcomers.
Yep.
So if none of that interests you, then you can just, shut off the podcast now.
You can just get the fuck out of here.
Any of those topics, particularly your fancy, kind of make you kind of like, oh, I do want to listen more about that.
Exactly. Then
stick around.
Yeah. Put up cue like bump music.
Yeah. After this commercial break.
Yeah. So where do you, do we want to just talk about, we can also talk about our experience with the Kickstarter too.
Well, I don't know, some context. I don't know, I have no idea what your listenership is, but I'm sure they would. I always appreciate a little context.
So I will leave that to you, since you're the one who ran the campaign.
Yes. Well, so the initial thought, what has led us to where we are now is that, so there's HeroesCon, North Carolina. Both Taylor and I have heard a lot about it. It's heard nothing but compliments about the convention, how cool it is, how good a place it is for creators. So between Taylor, Brittany, our colorist for the book, and I, between the three of us, we're like, okay, let's check this one out. This is going to be our convention we kind of premiere at. Or let's all get together and table this convention. And so so then it's like, all right, so the three people working on Skeleton Bay are all going to be at HeroesCon together because we've worked on Skeleton Bay. So let's have something there. Mm-hmm. And so that's where then the idea for this book came out. So, because the idea to have this book is, like I said, it's a short mini comic, but it's a bit of a proof of concept, a bit of a kind of proof that we can make a book, that we can make a physical object to hold in your hands. And it's kind of our first entry into the comic community.
Right.
And so we were kicking around this idea. We wound up taking a script that I had written, the first script I had written for Skeleton Bay.
Yeah, it was initially like the first issue.
Yeah, it was originally going to be the initial issue. We've cut it down to the size it is now as a preview. And then, or it's going to, again, it's black and white, 12 pages, short, quick. And I was talking to some people. I was talking to a friend of mine and saying, like, maybe we'll just, like, email our friends and family and just ask them to throw us a couple bucks and, you know, maybe help fund this printing. To which he said, dude, you should just do a Kickstarter because, you know, set the goal low, but do a Kickstarter to try out Kickstarter. And that was some sage advice. And so that's what led then to the Kickstarter. And we only asked for $550. And
we ended up tripling it, though.
Yeah,
we ended up roughly
About $1,500. And so that was a super cool, very successful. And consequently, we're going to have it colored.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany is currently working on coloring it. And so all the Kickstarters are going to have a colored copy. And we're going to have some extra issues to bring to other conventions as a fully colored, finished product. And so so that was all for this convention that we went to. And so that was all of the events leading up to a couple weeks ago. That's the prelude to convention.
Yep.
And yeah.
Which yeah, like you mentioned, it is definitely, it's a big fan favorite convention. I think it's one of those conventions where I think both fans and creators that go, like, equally love it. You know, because I'm sure there's conventions where, like, you know, creators don't really like it, but fans love it. Like, I haven't been there myself, but I feel like San Diego might kind of be like that.
Yeah, I think just
because it's so chaotic.
I think that's, like, well, you know, like, some of them are such as San Diego, and some of the, even the higher profile ones, the ones that draw, you know, dozens of thousands, you know, like C2E2 was like 30,000 people. And,
yeah. Well, but C2E2 is like this weird exception because it has such a nice prominent artist alley.
I'd say it would be kind of comparable to like Emerald City and similar to kind of maybe Denver Comic Con is still growing, but that one's also kind of big. Mm. And those are like big in the presence of creators, but also of exhibitors and everything. And Heroes is unique because percentage wise, the square, like for the square footage of the convention, the Artist Alley is about half.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also it's not so highly attended as to be suffocating.
Exactly.
I think that's why it's a creator appreciated by the creators, because there's still a lot of the kind of the cool high profile creators are there without having it be a San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah. And it's like, it feels like the tone is just way more mellow, you know, like the artists like get together and they go bar hopping or they just chill out, or like, you know, we ended up going to the after party, which is just super chill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just sit around and talk and it was taking place at the comic shop that helped sponsor the convention. So a lot of people were just buying comics, including myself. So yeah, it's got this very like kind of mellow, on the down low kind of atmosphere, which I really like about it.
It's kind of one of those like, you know, best kept secrets of the convention circuit kind of places of, you know, kind of that feel.
Yeah. Which is weird. Cause I mean, it's not like it's a secret per se.
No, but like, it's kind of that diamond in the rough. I don't know. That, like,
yeah, well, yeah, it's such a weird beast because it's, you know, it's not, it's in this weird limbo where it's not super small and it's not huge. It's like just right. It's fucking, yeah, you know, Goldilocks level where it's just right.
Yes. It's got a real Goldilocks atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, I thought that, I think ultimately, I thought it was having not yet been to another convention, I think that one was a really solid one to start at.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very good one, I would say, to be your first to table at.
Yeah.
For the exact reasons that we mentioned, you know, it's not too big, but there's still people, there's a lot of foot traffic, but it's not, you know, smothering in how many people there are. And you can network really easy, like, because, you know, I think Brittany said it at least 10 times, like, this is a networking con. Yeah. You know, it's a con to network. And that's another aspect that really separates it from a lot of the other ones, where you can, it's small enough and it's not too crowded enough where you can just walk up to another artist booth, shake their hand and talk about stuff for a little bit. And
I think there's a lot of other conventions that it's more difficult to do that.
Yeah. Like for example,
we're swamped and they're swamped and everyone's, you know, focused in on, right. Cause it's also like, and I'm sure the price of table at other conventions affects, you know, interest in wandering. In the sense that, you know, that other conventions that are more expensive to be present at, you have to hustle your books more. You know, you gotta make even more sales to break even than you at this smaller convention.
Right. So what do you want to start with first? Do you want to start like how did it meet your expectations? Like, I'll ask you that. Like, did it meet them? Did it fall below them? Did it exceed your expectations of what you thought HeroesCon was going to be? I know you talked about it was a huge learning experience for both of us.
Absolutely.
And I remember you telling me, like, you know, would you say you had like a little bit of regret about how you handled, like, just what we did the first couple days, because it's a 3-day con, versus like what we did on the last day?
Well, so thank you for that leading question.
No, that's what I do.
I think my overall reaction was that I'm definitely glad I went. It's interesting. I think I'm glad I went because it was successful in its first step towards being in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the world that I'd like to live in, or at least participate in moving forward in my life. And so it was cool to be able to be there to be at a convention in general.
Right.
I think the goal of meeting other creators, I think ultimately was met. I think, as a first introduction into the world, it was a good one. I think moving forward personally as a writer more instead of an artist, it's going to be interesting to see. I need to apply more thought to where I go, what I do with conventions, because on one hand, I want to keep on going to more and more and be there and be present and be around this community and you know, try to, this is a way to promote myself as a comic book creator, is to be at these conventions. But at the other hand, I made almost no money. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a difficult thing to repeat regularly.
Right.
Like, it's kind of like, I consider this, an investment in marketing, you know, of the small business that is Cameron Petty Inc. You know, that this is the money I spent on the plane and the hotel and the food and the women. No. and all of the expenses of the trip was totally an investment that I don't regret making. But it was interesting because I didn't make any money. And so...
Yeah, you know, so the sustainability of it...
Exactly.
Is comes into question. And I totally get what you mean, because...
Takeaway.
Yeah, as a writer, you don't have much to peddle besides the book.
Yeah. If I have a book, you know, that book.
Yeah, like if you were tabling by yourself, it wouldn't make much sense, because you would literally just have Skeleton Bay.
Yeah.
You know, versus me or Brittany, where, like, when you're an artist, you can sell prints, you can sell the book you're on, whatever, you can do commissions. So that's why you don't see as many writers, unless they're big, you know, big names. Like, at C2E2, we had Mike Mignola, Gail Simone.
Well, Mike Mignola is an artist.
Well, you know? Yeah, but he doesn't do as much these days.
No, but he's got his distinctive style that is marketable.
Yeah, and then there's Mark Wade.
Well, it's interesting. It's why you see most of the writers. Anytime you see a writer, most of the time they're sponsored by their company. That they're right. There with Marvel or with Image or with Dark Horse, like signing at the Dark Horse table, mm-hmm. because you couldn't ever, you know. Just buying, because there's only a limited point to buying an artist alley table if you don't have anything but, you know, a comic book that you get 4% off the back end to sell, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, to go off with that, at Heroes Con, you had Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick, who I think it was Milk Fed Masterminds is like their label, I guess you could say. Which there's a ton of people under, including Chip Zdarsky, and Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon, which is why they were next to them. Yeah, so there was like this L-shaped table where you had the four of those people, Fabio, Gabriel, Kelly Sue, and Matt, mm-hmm. you know, kind of wrapping around. And that was it's like they were representing their brand
in a way. Like Ben Templesmith, I've seen, does that. He has Ben Templesmith is a kind of a goth figure, and he has his like brand, and he'll have like a double wide table or whatever full of other goths like loitering around for various reasons. Yeah. It's kind of intimidating.
Well, it's like Justin Jordan. Yeah. Like Justin Jordan at his had like just stacks of books, you know, because the guy he's becoming because. You know, him and Tred have had this meteoric rise with Luther Strode, and now Justin's probably writing four books, five books, something like that. Like, he has a new book coming out.
Yeah.
And he's got Spread, and he's got another book. I'm blanking on its name.
I don't know.
It's got Man in the title, but I mean,
something's marketable eventually. Like, there are people who are making, other writers that are making it work. Me, at the level that I'm at, it's hard to sustain. And so that was that's kind of perhaps the biggest food for thought. Because I brought down some pieces of art that I made because I was like, all right, I'm going to try to sell something. And there's these cardboard pieces that I spray painted with like monster hands and tentacles. Check, look out for Etsy. They'll be up there because I did not sell any of them at the convention. I'll see what, you know, if Etsy wants them, but like, as I broke the barrier, the perception that the creators at comic book conventions make thousands and thousands of dollars, I did not make any money. So that was kind of the negative takeaway, if you will. I don't know about negative, but the more kind of the realistic takeaway was that we'll see. Where else I want to, I would like to be at, you know, all over the place. I would love to go to to Emerald City, you know, and I'd like to look into doing C2E2 and, you know, there's a whole laundry list of places I'd like to be. And a lot of it's just like, so I can see the people that I met at Heroes, so I can see them in person again and like, you know, not lose that rapport that I generated.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. When I have to put up the money for Emerald City, we'll see where.
And like you and I had discussions throughout the weekend about, you know, the advantages and disadvantages of being an artist, disadvantages and advantages of being a writer. And like, as a writer, you can stretch yourself further in terms across several projects. So not to say that, you know, breaking into the industry is easy, but I think you're able to like spread your reach farther.
Well, I think the trade-off is it's harder to market. it's harder to be to market yourself as a writer.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, less tumblerable.
Mm-hmm.
That you can share, you know, art that you've done very easily. You can disseminate your webcomic. You can disseminate your pinups pretty easily, especially on, you know, nowadays on the internet.
Right.
But it's harder to, you know, so you can do more projects at a time, but the ability to
market them, you have to basically
start those projects. It's kind of a higher.
You basically just have to like send them out to people and email them versus.
Well, something that I, you know, there's also like the idea of, you know, hiring people. You got to hire people for your book.
Yeah.
What it is that if you have an idea, it's 100% more easy to hire someone than to attempt to find someone who is willing to collaborate, who is willing to kind of take it on 50-50, you know, shoulder the burden with you. I was lucky enough to find you.
Mm-hmm. We were
lucky enough to find each other that we're in the same position of wanting, you know, willing, being interested in collaborating on, you know, on this project. That is not the case, especially when it comes to, you know, people who are already professionals and don't need me to like pitch them ideas.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what they need is actual physical money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's the other way to do it, is to, you know, hire people, which is a side note, completely valid way to do it, in the sense that like you should hire people if you're not, you know, like if you haven't found that perfect pairing of someone who's willing to, you know, go the distance with you, then you should pay them. If you like their work, pay them.
Exactly. But that's the moral of the story, either way.
If there's no other takeaway from this than this podcast, it is if you like people's art, pay them for it.
Yeah.
But
or don't walk up to their table and go, "Wow, that's a really nice spike drawing." Okay,
yeah,
bye.
Either pay them or say that their Bob's Burger print is really good, and then walk away, leaving them dejected.
Yeah.
As many did Taylor over the weekend. That was the other big takeaway, is that you you have to have a really thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
That it's interesting because I'm from a theater background. I do a lot of theater lighting, but I've acted a lot, or not a lot, but I've been in performance. And so there's all the talk about auditioning and like how you always, you know, you get a million no's before you get one yes, and you have to have a thick skin when you go on auditioning. And auditioning sucks. But that's like two or three minutes. You do your monologue, you feel awful, you do your monologue, you leave and you feel awful, and then you go get some ice cream. this was like 8 hours, 3 days a week, three straight days, 8 hour shifts of like a parade of people walking past and liking their work, but not loving it so much as to put money down.
Right.
And it's a different, like, it's a less sharp sense of rejection than like auditioning. Like if you get told no, you're not getting the part, there's this like sharp stab of rejection. Like, oh man, I suck, don't I?
Yeah.
But like to have like a low level people who are interested, but don't really super care, as a, just like a constant hum to the whole weekend, is kind of a different experience. It's kind of a different, interesting, like, sense of rejection. A different experience with it. And it's, you know, and that's part of the job, you know, that's part of the experience, is that, you know, out of 100 people, only one of them is going to really give a shit about your spike print, you know?
Well, several people gave a shit about it. And to the point that they saw it and they liked it, but no one bought it.
No one bought it. Still, it's up on your wall, isn't it?
I need to still have it in packing, but I'm just gonna like put it on Facebook and be like, who the hell wants this?
Put it on Etsy. It's everybody's on Etsy. I'm putting a lot of eggs in the Etsy basket. Come join me.
I might do like a big cartel or something. A big cartel. It's a website. It's similar. I know a lot of artists use it. Chris Somni, Ryan Stegman, a couple other people.
You know, peers.
Yeah. That's the thing, people. If you're listening to this right now and you're an artist or a writer, want to work in comics, you know, throw out the word aspiring, because it's become a pet peeve of mine when people say I'm an aspiring blank, you know, because like if you're an artist and you're making art, you're an artist. If you're writing stuff, you're a writer. You know, you need to, and you, when you want to be in like something, any real industry, but like, for instance, with us in the comic industry, you have to kind of realize that you're now peers of these people that if you've been a comic fan forever or, you know, however your entire life or whatever, that you're now their peers, you know?
That was an interesting experience for me, because that is something I struggle with often, is that imposter syndrome, you know, a feeling, and I still kind of, I'm not entirely over it, of feeling like, oh, Cameron doesn't belong in this group of people. I've not earned it yet. You know, I feel like I do reflexively describe myself as like an aspiring artist or aspiring writer.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of an interesting takeaway from, the weekend. The after party that you had mentioned, that was post show Sunday. It was at the Heroes comic book shop.
Yeah. Heroes aren't hard to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of creators there and a bunch of people and, hanging out and just like shooting the shit at like what's basically just like a barbecue setting, mm-hmm. with people who are creating these comics was kind of an interesting experience. It was kind of a humanizing experience, I'd say.
Yeah. Cause we kind of put them on the pedestal and now it's like, they're just people like us doing what they love.
Yeah, and it's people who have made it work. You know, that's the other thing, is that it's just like they are normal. Not only are they normal people, but these normal people are doing work. You know, are succeeding, are making comics. You know, and so it's this combination of bringing them down to kind of, you know, to a more human level, and also, you know, feeling better about it, that the fact that it is just humans doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's no reason to feel like a kid looking up at the adult table,
right?
You know, when,
because that's the thing, like we made a book and we printed a book. You are now a writer. I am now a comic artist.
True.
We
sold it. We technically have made money as comic book creators.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those deals where, you know, because. In the age we live in now with the internet, it's like there's so many ways you can just get into the industry and make a comic.
Yes. That,
you know, we kind of have to, there's no really need to like legitimize yourself per se. You know, as soon as you make something and other people like it and enjoy it and you're putting it out there, whether it's a webcomic or like what we did or whatever, you know.
There are even fewer and fewer gatekeepers than there have been ever, you know.
Right.
Even fewer barriers.
Right. And
yeah, you know, that like we raised, you know, $1,500 to print comic books. You know, that was cool.
Yeah. And so, we got it in the hands of quite a few people. And because we kind of gave it, because that's the thing, like, two is that, you know, obviously you don't want to like spam people and bug and be a nuisance to people, but like you try and get it in as many hands as possible, you know, at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
You know, where you and I are, it's like, you know, we're not where like Matt Fraction is, or
no.
You know, Eric Powell or Tradmore or any of that, you know, where we can just sit and people will just come to us. You know, we have to get our name out there and we have to give it to them. You know, and if we make money selling it, great. And we made, you know, a couple bucks. I forget how many, what was it, 8 issues we sold?
Yes. Yeah. So exactly $16.
Yeah, so $16. And, but we gave out a bunch more. And that was specifically
We brought like 30, we sold 8, and we left home, came back with 7.
Okay.
I don't know how that math works out. We gave, but we disseminated into the world, you know, like 20 of those comics or whatever.
Yeah, like 15 or something.
15 or 16 of those comics. So it's 15 or 16 more people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the other reality is like, you never know what will click. And that's, I mean, because that's the other reality of like, of freelance, of like self-publishing, of striking out on your own, is that, you know, and that's the key to networking in general, is just like, talk to everybody, make, you know, let people know that you exist, because you never know how people are actually reacting, you know, if we might stick in someone's brain in some meaningful way, and mm-hmm. you know, it will pay off in a year or 3 years or something.
Right. Because sometimes all it takes is just knowing a guy.
Yeah. And it's also like, you know, the next time you see someone that you gave someone the book, they'll probably, you know, most of the people we gave the book to probably won't necessarily remember us. But we have a kind of entry point into a conversation.
Right.
You know, who knows if that means anything, you know, who knows how significant that will be to the, you know, the next time we see, who's the guy who does Iron Man Power Fist?
Oh, Sanford Green.
Sanford Green.
Yeah, but that's a good example. You want to tell the story about that?
I'd love to tell the story. So Sanford Green, who's the artist on Power Man and Iron Fist, awesome book. Check it out if you haven't seen it. And so this was a Sunday at right after the floor closed. So everyone's packing up. Everyone's closing down. Or actually, it was right before the closed floor. But everyone's packing up. And Taylor and I were kind of scuttling around last minute to try to kind of toss our book to people who we admire, and just kind of get the book out there. We had some extra copies. Let's get rid of them. So we go over to Sanford Green. And Sanford Green, he was standing around talking to his friends. And as we stand there, as we kind of float around, kind of waiting our turn to talk to him, I happen to, of course, overhear their conversation. And they're talking about how they hate how people walk past and throw them free shit. How there's a bunch of people who just give them their book, throw their book at their face, and just wander away. And they were talking about how an ash can is like a small preview comic book that is cheaply made and is black and white and is almost basically exactly what we have. Ours is not entirely what an ash can is, but basically an ash can. And Sanford Green and his friends were talking about how they hate those. So I turn to Taylor and say, maybe this is the absolute worst time to give him our comic book. Taylor, the level-headed one of us in that moment, was like, no, just stick it out. Just hold out for a second. And so Sanford Green finally turns to us in that moment and is like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, well, this is bad timing, but we'd like to give you our comic book. And so they all burst out laughing. We nervously laugh along with them. And ultimately his impression was he was impressed by the fact that we heard them talking about it and stuck around and complimented us on our courage for doing so, and complimented us on our book, and hopefully, you know, that so ultimately left him with a good impression, and what he was kind of, you know, he was pleased by our book. Our book looked a little bit nicer than what he was talking about to his friends.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you got to have confidence in what we're presenting. And I think Skeleton Bay, like, that's a product that we should and are very proud of, because it looks very professional. You know, the three of us know our shit. You know, I made sure when I was putting the pages together and formatting it for the print, like, to make it as professional looking as possible. And
I think we have a big leg up in that sense. I can't be anything but subjective about the book, but I do know objectively is that by having I've gone around to a lot of different comic book conventions. I work for a company called Print Ninja. It's a printing company that specializes in comic books and printing, that kind of stuff. Side note, no, we did not print with Print Ninja. There's an irony, I know. But I worked for them going to comic book conventions and telling people about our stuff. So That is all to say that I've been to a lot of comic book conventions specifically to look at people's comic books. And so I can objectively say that there is a large chunk at the kind of on the bottom of the spectrum of quality that I think we're above. And I think it's because, like, first of all, we're not making stupid mistakes like having low res images. We chose to print our books at a professional printer. We used a Greco printing, which is one of the two companies that you'll hear a lot of the smallest indie people printing with. It's like Greco Printing, and Kablam is the other big printing house that prints small batches of comic books. So we're using, you know, basically more of an industry familiar company to print them. Like Taylor said, you know, we put a lot of attention into making sure the book looked nice. Each feature of the book was well put together. There's a lot going for us just like out of the gate by not making some classic mistakes.
Right. And I think that's a testament to, like, you know, the education of both Brittany and I, is that this is stuff we were taught at SCAD. Yeah. And, you know, while we kind of have love-hate relationships with the school, we can definitely... There's stuff that we, you know, that we did learn. And, you know, I know for a fact that I did. I mean, obviously I can't speak entirely for Brittany. I know Brittany has done stuff after SCAD 2, where she learned, like, that she wants to be a colorist, and that's where she wants to make a career out of it, and she is. Yeah. And that's great for her. But I know for a fact that, like, a lot of the shit that went into this book stems from my education at SCAD. And it's like, you know, the stuff like scanning at 400 DPI, so it's not low res. That's why I'm sure, because of the stuff she's learned both at SCAD and after, that's why Brittany put stuff in TIFFs that are super high quality, so they can easily be compressed like bit by bit to be a little smaller and more manageable, you know. And it's way easier with files to start huge and shrink them down, you know, either through lower resolution or what have you, than take low res shit and blow it up.
Yes. That leads us to our next segment, is what we like to call excruciating details about the finer points of file sizes.
Yes.
So go on, please explain.
I'm just saying.
No, but absolutely. That's something that you either, like, learn in school or you learn the hard way.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you know that is, you know, I guess this has turned into a podcast about the value of higher education, but I'm very appreciative of that, or I'm very cognizant and subsequently appreciative of the technical acumen that you guys have.
Yeah, and yeah. It's not to say that, like, you have to go to art school or whatever to know this, but if you for whatever reason can't, then make sure you go out there and look for it on the internet, because it's definitely out there on the internet. Yeah. You know, so yeah, there's no excuse.
But it, you know, at that, you know, talk, you know, on the topic, on the previewed at the beginning of the podcast topics of, you know, takeaways from, you know, our first impressions as first timers, that is, you know, I that is something that you notice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that like I was saying, that it's easier to showcase art than it is words. Right. That no matter, like, how good your premise is, you could have a sterling, brilliant, amazing premise with just dumb art, and you just and you'd never be able to get anywhere with it. You'd never be able to get any traction, because, you know, when you're previewing a book, when you have 45 seconds at someone's table to flip through a book, you look at the, you know, you look at the pictures, you don't sit down and read the comic.
Right.
So
it's definitely a microcosm of I mean, well, not even a microcosm. It's just, it's a perfect example of the art of designing comic books, you know, from catching someone's eye with a cover and stuff like that. And I think we did that, you know, with Skeleton Bay.
Yeah.
That's why we sold 8 copies.
Yeah. Those 8 copies were not sold for nothing.
Yeah. And yeah. That was, I mean, I don't know if you had any sort of expectation on how many issues you thought we would sell if we met those expectations or.
I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're completely, you know, completely new characters, completely first time anyone has ever seen that book, the fact that anyone was interested in it was cool.
Well, that's another takeaway is the fact that there's now 8 more people at least who
that were willing to put money on a table, you know, as the nominal fee that it was, they still did decide, you know, to buy it, and right. That was cool.
Yeah,
you know, we officially have a fan base.
Yeah, for something that, you know, 72 hours before. No one had known outside of some of our friends and people that contributed to the Kickstarter, which was only 50 some odd people, yeah. You know, to go to another state and just plop down and put it out there and have completely, you know, complete strangers come up and be like, oh, you know, that's a huge deal for people like us that are very much newbies. Brittany, not as much because she's actually had published work, but yeah.
You know what we didn't do though, is put our website on it to put our like our even the Skeleton Bay Facebook on it. So that was maybe a misstep. That those 8 people now kind of don't really have a way to like follow the comic book.
Well,
Wompy Womp.
Well, but they have our information.
Yes, they have our emails.
So they could go and you know they could go to. You know, one of my websites or Brittany's websites.
Hopefully they will. Yeah. If you're listening right now, one of the 8 people that bought our comic book, the Facebook is facebook.com/ SPDA. I'm not sure. 1 second. I'm going to look at this right now. just in case you guys, and actually anyone, any listeners who are curious about Skeleton Bay Detective Agency can look at Skeleton Bay. Yeah, /TSBDA, the Skeleton Bay Detective Agency.
I'll put it in the description.
Please do. Yeah, man, you gotta keep up the social media outreach. You know, gotta have that presence. Gotta make that hustle.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you about. We actually had like a really interesting conversation about Twitter.
You and I?
Yeah, because we were just talking about.
Oh yes, of course. Now it's all coming back to me. Go on, please. Well,
it was just the nature of how, like, you were talking about how you have yet to become used to like the logic of Twitter.
Oh, and, like, yeah,
and yes. And which I just find like a really fascinating idea. You know, like because this is coming from someone who's become very adept at Twitter. I guess you could say because for starters, if you're a young artist. Trying to break it out, you know, use Twitter, please, because it's a really quick, fast way to network. Because I've had Twitter conversations with, you know, Chris Somney, Paolo Rivera, Chip Zdarsky, all kinds of people. And what's cool about Twitter is that you can directly interact with people. You know, you could have a little mention of them, you know, and send a message directly to them. And of course, you know, there are going to be people that ignore it, but there are going to be people that, you know, either like it or respond or whatever. And, you know, in some cases you might get followed back. And, you know, in my case, I've had a handful, you know, so people of varying presence in the comic industry. And that's what works.
Yeah. You know?
And it's definitely a really good way. Like, to reach out to editors if you can't find their emails.
Mm.
Because I have followed almost every editor at Oni Press, a handful at Boom, and a couple of like Viz, there's some Marvel people, you know, it's just that way you have, you kind of always have your finger on the pulse of, you know, in every stage of the production of a comic, you know, writers, artists, editors, colorists, you know, just follow as many people as you can, really.
Everyone's, you know, likes and dislikes, so what they ate at dinner, you know, what an editor at Marvel did with their child earlier that day, you know, what zoo they went to.
See, now you know that they have children. Bam, there you go.
I can use that information I can leverage that information to further my comic book career.
Exactly. That they have children. Exactly.
Good.
Now you're getting it.
I will say, in this last week and a half since the comic book convention, I have more actively participated in Twitter, and it has been an interesting, somewhat of an experiment. You know, I'm doing, this is a new initiative in my life, because this was the conversation Taylor and I was having, was that I felt like it was kind of a weird medium to me, because it feels so ephemeral that it's weird that people derive so much meaning from it, in the sense that, like, CNN will put tweets up during their newscasts, and it's like, also, I don't give a shit about what, like, @MrKitty69 has to say. I would much rather, if I'm watching the news, which I don't watch cable news, but hey, it's a different conversation. If I'm watching the news, I would much rather watch Wolf Blitzer than MrKitty69. So,
my favorite.
That's kind of, that was my initial, that was where I was pre-con, was this weird sense of like, I don't, it's a weird thing that we do to like derive so much meaning from Twitter. Now, post-con, is it what the big change of heart, so to speak, was that I did, the people that I met, the handful, you know, the five or six people that I met and actually had substantive conversations with at the convention, I followed on Twitter immediately so that I can kind of, you know, maintain that relationship, mm-hmm. or, you know, generate an ongoing rapport, rather. And there have been a handful of people that I've actually, you know, had exchanges back and forth, and it has been cool to have that kind of casual conversation with people, because I think it is, I will say, as ephemeral as I perceived it, in the sense that it is just like bleeps and bloops at people, but, you know, it's those bleeps and bloops of just kind of casual, you know, chatting with people. Someone will post a funny idea, and I'll respond to that and be like, oh yeah, it's a cool idea. And, you know, and that's a single unit of currency towards our relationship. You know, every tweet is, you know, a penny in the bank, and, you know, a penny doesn't mean very much, but after a while you can put all those pennies in the coin star and come out with cash.
And the cash does friendship. The
cash that is friendship. Hashtag extended metaphor. I'm sure all of the listeners are very impressed by my wordsmithing. Yes. Check out Skeleton Bay, Detective Agency, Midnight at McLeod Mansion for more clever repartee like that.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, anyway, you know, not to name drop, but, like, you know, you have Ian McGinty, who recently did Welcome to Showside, which is a comic for Z2. He's worked on stuff for Boom, like Adventure Time and Munchkin. And, you know, we kind of have this running thing where we make fun of, like, shitty mashup fandom, like, t-shirt designs. Like, the one where it's, like, it's Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII on the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones. And, or, like, minion art. Yeah, like, that's, like, a running joke with us where it's just, like, I forget what he posted. It was, like, some minion thing. I'm like, oh, no, it was a mashup t-shirt that was, like, the first one he posted wasn't minion-related, but I made it minion-related. Yeah, of course. Where it was the gun barrel from James Bond, and at the end of the gun barrel was Ash from Evil Dead.
Okay, of course, sure.
And they're like, this doesn't make a lot of sense if you're trying to, like, evoke the shotgun thing. But, and then I was like, please, if we're going to do a James Bond mashup t-shirt, do it the right way. And it was like a James Bond minion, and it's a 007. And it's like, you know, that kind of shit. Or, you know, me and Ryan Stegman have shot some tweets back and forth about basketball, you know.
And that was something that was, you know, that he remembered it at C22.
Yeah, like I brought up to him, and he's like, "Oh yeah, from Twitter." I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." Like,
and that's, you know, again, it's, you know, kind of an ephemeral relationship. It's kind of a, you know, relationship built over bleeps and bloops. But that, you know, back to that idea that you never know.
But he remembers me, and you know, people remember you. It's like, even.
And I think that's what that is. What that means is that, like, then, you know, when you, if you. Then go on. See, this here you go. This is the crucial step, though, is that, like, so he remembers you. So when you do something of significance, you know, when you improve, when you've hustled and, like, put yourself in a position to, like, be hired, and Ryan Stegman's like, "Oh, hey, I remember that dude. Yeah, that dude has a funny Twitter." That puts you, you know, that dollar worth of pennies built a, you know, the Twitter friendship pennies metaphor. That's, you know, a couple pennies more than the other artist that he's going to suggest.
Right.
You know? And that's, you know, and that's, again, that's kind of classic, you know, networking 101 is to just kind of, you know, build those type of relationships. That's like, oh, when they go to hire someone, you know, you're memorable. And I think that's, I have come to appreciate that that's kind of the value of Twitter. Is maybe, you know, the quote unquote friendships I generate over Twitter may or may not be the most objectively substantial. And, you know, because I can talk to Paolo Rivera doesn't mean he'd ever remember me other than my Twitter handle. But if and when, you know, I prove myself as a worthwhile writer to care about, maybe that will give me a leg up. Maybe, you know, Paolo Rivera be like, "Oh, that dude, yeah, he's a funny Twitter. All right, cool. And he's a good writer? Cool. More of a reason to hire him."
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. I'm going to actively try to be on Twitter more. So yeah. Follow me at MSTRCPP. The letter P.
You said PP.
It's my initials, Cameron Philip Petty. I was named after my father.
There you go.
My middle name is my father's name. So I am proud that I CPP.
CPP. Yes. Is there any other, I guess, should I finally just, like, go into details about my whole woes with my Spike Spiegel drawing?
I mean, if that's the segment of this podcast that you further complain about no one liking you, Spike.
Well, it's a cautionary tale about how, you know, keep your expectations lowered when it's like when you're early on in your con tabling career, because, you know, it's like what you said. It's like people, you know, grow the thick skin, and it's just I wanted because it was just funny. It's just a funny anecdote.
Yes.
So, like, not
thinking too personally.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying it's a funny anecdote where, you know, first day of the con, and, like, here in my head, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna, like, doodle stuff to keep myself busy. And I'd been wanting to draw Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop for a while. Like, just, like, not even for the con, but just in general. Like, oh, man, I've been wanting to draw him. And so I did a bust drawing of him, and this is where it gets funny. Like, the second I put it down, you know, a guy just, like, stops and, like, comes up, and he's like, "Wow, that's a really good Spike Spiegel." And it's like, "Thank you." And
when Taylor says when he just put down, he literally means, like, as he was placing it on the table, this dude appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah. Cameron can attest to this.
There's no,
he
no
was right next to me.
No exaggeration. As he was putting it down.
And there was, remember the other guy, it was like on Saturday, where he stopped it like dead and you could hear his shoe. Like,
that was also a literal, like, scurry.
Yeah, like.
Stopped in his tracks to come over and look at this Spike picture.
If it was a shitty kids movie, there would have been like a record scratch.
Oh, yeah. There basically was.
Yeah.
I think I heard it. But I will say, here you go, on this emerging theme of this podcast, which is you never know, always try because you never know where it's going to cut, you know, always, cast a wide net theme, is that I will say that that guy that was interested in Spike was, I believe, our first customer. I think he bought the first comic book.
I think so.
He was he was drawn in by your Spike and stayed and talked to us a little bit and then really liked the comic and he bought our comic. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't buy the Spike, but the Spike did bring him in. And really? Also, more lucratively, you want a lot of your commissions. You did, there was a couple guys that stopped by. And...
Well, basically, I should start this by saying that the vast majority of my income from the con were commissions, which is not what I was expecting at all, which is a testament to the kind of, you know, the theme that we're kind of going for in this segment about tabling, where, you know, expect the unexpected, kind of lower your expectations, you know. And as Cameron said, yeah, like, so, you know, I got sketch cover commissions. And if you don't know what sketch cover commissions are, basically at conventions, they'll different vendors and exhibitors will sell blank covers that you can draw on. And they'll have the logo, you know, whether it's a Doctor Strange or Green Arrow or Miss Marvel, et cetera, et cetera. And it'll just be blank with the logo.
The weirdest three characters you could have given as an example of.
Are they?
Doctor Who, Green Arrow, and Captain Marvel.
I thought I said Doctor Strange. But yeah, Doctor Who, whatever, you know. He has a comic too.
Anyway.
And this is something like you'll see these from Frank Cho or Ryan Ottley or Babs Tarr or whatever. Like I think I saw Ryan Stegman doing one when I went to stop by and he was doing a Rocket Raccoon. And
it's like a fun way. It's a fun way to, if you're going to get original art from someone, it's a fun place to put it, which on the cover of a comic book.
And it makes the comic, you know, if you're one of those people that wants to like collect and sell it, it makes it a lot more worth, you know, it gives it a lot more worth because you have original art on the cover. Plus you have the book inside. Yeah. So, and so my first commissions were, I believe they were sketch covers.
Were they? Yeah, they were.
Yeah, and it's like, I didn't expect it at all, and so I didn't really have a price point that I wanted to sell them at. I ended up selling them for, like, I think they were, like, 10, which was way too cheap, because they were just busts.
Well, then Brittany leans over afterwards and is like, oh, you should have sold them for 30. I'm like, oh, thank you, Brittany, for saying that afterwards.
Well, she didn't know. That's what she said. She was busy probably selling her own stuff. But it's like, it's just like, I had no idea. I am some schmo that has never tabled before.
The two thoughts on that, and I continue to insist that you ought not to feel bad about those, because those guys may or may not have hired you had the price been higher. I think
probably not.
Especially those first two commissions were, I think, I perceived it as contingent on the price. So I think you did a smart, it was savvy of you, whether you know, you didn't mean to or not, but it was savvy of you to keep the price low.
Well, you're calling me smart now, so I want to take credit for it.
Yes. It all was on purpose.
All on purpose.
Because then you knocked it out of the park and impressed them so much that they brought their friends. Mm-hmm. That you wound up doing like those two plus like three or four more.
Yeah, because the first two, and here's another thing, is that the vast majority of these commissions are so out there and weird and fun. Like they're not like, oh yeah, here's a Doctor Strange cover. Drop Doctor Strange on it for me.
It's a Doctor Who cover.
It's like, here's a Doctor Strange cover. Can you scratch out Strange and write Dr. Steve Brule? And it's like, fuck yes, I can. Like, yeah. And it was amazing. And I drew a bust of Dr. Steve Brule on a sketch cover for this guy, and who was great. And he actually tipped me like 15 more or five more dollars to make it 15. And then another guy was like, can you know, Garbage Pail Kids? And he gave me a Garbage Pail Kid, you know, commission for a sketch cover, and I did a bust, and that one's really easy because Garbage Pail Kids are pretty simple, because, you know, they're just, you know, parodies of Cabbage Patch Kids. And but then it's like another guy, like another of their friends, he got Mr. Sensitive from, was it X-Force?
Ecstatic.
Ecstatic.
My comrade, an old 90s comic. It's good.
Then another guy who was also friends with him came and wanted, it wasn't a sketch cover, but it was just a full body drawing of Ogrim from Warcraft, one of the orcs from Warcraft. And that one's been great, too, because he tweeted it out, and I swear to God, like, it has, like, 40-plus likes on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he tagged me in it, thankfully, and and he, like, tagged a bunch of people. Like, he tagged, like, the Warcraft, like, official account and stuff, and apparently people that worked on Warcraft. So, you know, that's fun, and that's, like, a great byproduct out of it. It's like, if you do great work, people will share it, and it will, you know. And I think the Steve Brule one was shared, too. So that was fun. I got another commission. There was that one guy who wanted these, like, weird mashup ones where he commissioned both Brittany and I. And I did a Vault Boy from Fallout, you know, basically activating a Green Lantern ring in mid-transformation. Yeah. And did Brittany get two?
She did do two. She did, because it was part of a series. He had someone else he had had do Donald Duck as, like, Thor or something. I don't know. Donald Duck as maybe as Green Lantern. And then Brittany did one that was Mickey Mouse as Captain America, and then Goofy as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I think they were all gifts for a friend or a...
I think at least the one I did was for, like, his nephew or something.
There was some sort of gift element to this all.
Right.
But I will say that the guys that you got the commissions, that kind of snowballed into a bunch of commissions, they were drawn in by that spike.
Right.
So as bitter as you are, as just terribly...
Well, it's not that I'm bitter. It's just that it's kind of like...
Ebenezer Scrooge-esque.
It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm type Larry, you know, Larry David reaction, where it's just like... like you play that music, and it's like, well, this is like farcical in a way, because it's like, because you at one point where you were like, you know, I would be shocked if no one buys it by the end of the weekend.
Well, you know, I think that's the takeaway of, like, you never know what people are going to want.
Yeah,
you know, you never know what people are going to actually want to put money down on.
Right.
And that's, you know, and that's definitely part of the growing the thick skin, you know, it's a twofold lesson of growing the thick skin, but also not knowing what's going to catch on. And that spike print, that those original pieces of art that did not sell, those led to sales.
Yeah.
You know, and I would suggest focusing on.
I'm focusing on it.
It's whole heart that has been just festering in fury that people have not purchased your spike print.
Don't worry.
It's just you full of anger and spite and just venom towards the world. I'm telling you.
I had that anyway before the spike print.
To have such loathing, such bitter, bitter loathing about the fact that people didn't like a spike print.
I was already a bitter, loathing being before the spike, so it may have actually, like, lowered it,
ironically. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be like, oh man, that's so shitty. It's just, it's like, when you, in hindsight, it's hilarious, because it's like...
It's fun, and the number of, it is funny, the sheer number of people...
That's really what it is like, the sheer number of people that...
ultimately have it not be sold.
Yeah, it's like the sheer number of people go, that's a good spike, and then, like, they left. Or, like, the Bob's Burgers one, where the guy...
Yeah.
It's so fucking funny. Like,
there was at least four or five people that really hung around. But the thing is that I'm very confident that that is not an unusual reaction, is that I suspect that basically everyone who tabled at that convention had that one piece that everybody super loved but no one would buy.
Right.
You know, that always a bridesmaid's never a bride. And that's, you know, and that's, it's, and that's the other thing that, that's the other value of going to more and more conventions is being able to really get a sense, you know, I would, you know, take, you know, the, in these next conventions, take these same prints to the next convention, see what happens there and see if you can sell any of them, mm-hmm. you know, or if people really like the Bob's Burgers one, maybe do a different Bob's Burgers one or something, or maybe do like a mashup of Bob's Burgers and something else and The Walking Dead just to really sell out.
Become that which I hate.
You know, point is that, you know, use it as, use this as, you know, market data instead of, you know, any sense of...
I need to go to an anime con and just make like really generic anime, like Steven Universe prints.
Well, it's, you know, it's no, it's knowing your audience, you know?
Yeah.
And being willing to, you know, if you're gonna, if this is gonna be what you do to make money, you know, have that kind of that commercial mindset.
Right.
You know, if you're going to a, you know, a convention to make money, you do kind of have to be like, kind of have to suck it up. It, you know, one way to make money is to suck it up and sell those, you know, generic anime prints or the Walking Dead mashups. I don't know. It's not a necessarily bad thing. It's not an inherently bad thing.
Unless it has minions.
It's a, yeah, except for Minions. Minions
the devil. Well, and that's why I made the Bob's Burgers print to begin with, is I was like, okay, I need, because I wanted one more, because I ended up making that one just in an 8.5x11 print. And before that, I only had one other 8.5x11 print. I didn't want it to sell that one by itself at that size. So I was like, okay, I want to make another 8.5x11. And... you know, one, I really love Bob's Burgers, and two, I know Bob's Burgers has this really great, like, cult appeal that will appeal to both kids and adults, you know, versus, say, like, I had a Mad Max print, and that would probably skew more older, excuse me, and I had a Spirit Away, which might stem more of a little bit of a niche, and probably a little bit younger. So, like, Bob's Burgers kind of hits that sweet spot, and you can tell by how many people were like, oh, Bob's Burgers.
There was a lot of, like, families and stuff that were, like, kids that were drawn by Bob's Burgers, and the parents were like, oh, yeah, Bob's Burgers. All right, Bob's Burgers.
All right.
But, you know, I don't know. That's the other thing is that that's for me, again, having been to as many conventions as I've been to, I feel like a lot of people have a lot of opinions. A lot of people that go to a bunch of different conventions, like, have... generated opinions about conventions. Oh, this convention is good for this. This convention is bad for that. You know, this, that, this, bad. All these different, like, opinions about these specific conventions. And in my experience, like, conventions are just, like, really subjective.
Right.
Like, I don't think any of these, you know, these type of conventions, you could really call exactly what, who's going to show up and what people will buy.
I mean, I didn't expect, like, to do sketch covers of,
you know, like, to say, like, Denver always sells this, you know, Seattle always sells that.
Yeah.
I think it's much more subjective to the whims of just, like, random nature, you know, random, you know, the acts of nature than anything, you know, cause you're right that I thought that, you know, Bob's Burgers was a good choice, but as it turns out, this convention didn't sell. Next convention, you know, if you go to Seattle, maybe it will find its niche in Seattle, but it could also find its niche in Denver, and, you know.
I
don't know. This is to say that the universe is chaotic. Nothing that we do ever matters.
Chaos all, theory.
we're all but dust in the wind. So set your bar low. You know,
keeps at large here to tell you that life is meaningless.
Yeah. So if that's all you need me for, I'm gonna get the.
So, do you have any other stories you want to tell? Like, just, you know, bouncing around, talking to people.
I don't know. I think another thing I'm definitely going to, I will say another interesting takeaway, another experience, a learning lesson was that, like, Sunday was a lot about getting out and talking to people. And, like, we went to the after party and, you know, and that was the day that I actually, like, did go out and talk to people.
Yes.
And that was my favorite day. That was the best day of the three because I did that. Conversely, middle of the, you know, Friday, I was at the table for most of the day trying to, you know, like, oh, wide-eyed, poor, naive Cameron thinking he'd sell his cardboard art. Check it out on Etsy, by the way. It'll be there somewhere.
Dire Steve Brule, check it out.
And we didn't. We didn't really sell very much. And so that kind of took a toll, kind of knocked a knock on my morale. And like then Saturday, you know, we come back in. It was kind of a fresh new day, but continued to not have any business. And you know, my skin, which has not been calloused enough to the cold hatred and indifference of the comic book audience,
the cold nihilism of the comic book
of the attendees of the Heroes of Con 2016. Middle of the day Saturday, I was feeling really kind of weird and kind of bummed out. You know, that when I went out and got lunch, I like left the convention and like went to Panera outside the convention, kind of a little bit of a walk away, and just kind of was like outside for a little bit. And that was just like, that helped me recharge my batteries from being kind of down. And then like at the end of the day on Saturday, I'm like, fine, I'll go talk to the couple. Like, I'll play your game. And so I did walk around a little bit and I did talk to a couple people, and that felt really good. And it felt cool to talk to people. And then Sunday, I was like, you know what? Since we're not swamped with customers, I'm going to, you know, go out and more. And so I did. And I wound up talking to people and making connections and handing out the book. And we handed out a bunch of books, you know, you and I, and then we went to the after party. It was all a significantly better day. And I think that, you know, going back to the idea of like, you know, food for thought for future the strategy of future conventions, that's absolutely going to factor into things, you know, is, yeah, and that was kind of, because that was kind of the goal in the first place that I kind of forgot. I kind of lost in the haze of maybe making sales, was that like, no, Cameron, don't be stupid. Don't get caught up in that. What's more important is being here as a creator and networking.
Right.
And so that was another big piece of food for thought, especially as someone who is not tied to the booth, that I have to sit down and you know, make commissions, you know, draw commissions and stuff. You know, that's a lot of, you kind of shackled to the table while you have to work. And as the writer, I don't quite have to be beholden quite as much.
Well, and that's like a silver lining to it. It's like when you're not swamped with people, you have a lot more freedom to just walk around.
Yeah.
Which obviously you know, ideally you'd want people swamping you and stuff.
Yeah, buying, that's just nervous.
Buying stuff ideally, but you know, but yeah, the silver lining of the circumstances we were under, you know, we had like, because we would almost take like shifts, you know, like,
yeah, a little bit,
and we made sure that very rarely we would have just one of us there. I think
that's,
well, I had time where I was by myself too.
You're kidding. Sort
of. But that's the thing. Like there was, I think, you know, not too often was there only one person left at the table. Like, I think, you know, you were there by yourself for a bit. I was there for some time, and I'm sure Brittany was there by herself for a little bit too.
Yeah.
And so, and that's kind of the nice thing about having three of us, is that, you know, it allows us a little more freedom and different combinations of people to have at the table. And yeah. And since we weren't busy selling stuff, we could go around and network, and I could, you know, I would like grab some stuff, take it out, come back 15 minutes later. Okay, that person wasn't at their table. I'm going to, you know, switch out to stuff, because I wanted to get stuff signed and I wanted to network a bit too. And yeah, so yeah, there are benefits to, you know, what happened with us, but, you know.
That was the other big takeaway, was to not do three people at a table.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing, is that, you know, I mean, I think you're really only supposed to have two people selling stuff at a table.
Yes.
You know, and
because that's also not like, I think maybe kind of a con etiquette thing as an unspoken rule, but yeah, also just physically difficult to squeeze in three people's worth of stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, if only two of us were selling stuff, you know, I think
that, yeah, it would have been a lot better.
You know, yeah. And
you'd have gotten a foot and a half, or what is that? An entire foot more of room.
Maybe.
But that's a big take. Well, I mean, that's actually the other takeaway, is that I don't need to bother bringing any ancillary things of my own, because no one's going to really, unless it's a convention that's like an arts and craft focused convention, mm-hmm. I won't bother bringing a whole suitcase worth of extra tchotchke art.
Well, and, you know, going back to, like, you know, your 3 days and, like, your kind of roller coaster of emotions. Yeah. The thing to keep in mind is that Fridays are usually slow. Because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just, I'm saying that in general for the listeners, too, is like.
Oh, yes, of course, them. Yes.
You know, if it's slow on Friday, dear listeners, and you're tabling, don't get too discouraged because, you know, it's still a work day. You know, most people are, of course, working, and you're going to see a lot more people. And even for us, we saw a lot more people. Like, we sold, like, I think together our table sold, like, maybe $10.
Yeah.
On Friday. But then that skyrocketed up to, like, $50 on Saturday, and then another $40 on Sunday or something.
Yeah.
So I ended up with like $100-ish. And, you know, for Brittany and I, it's like, you know, hey, we paid off the amount we paid for the table.
Yeah.
Which, hey, that's something.
For Cameron, he ate his losses amongst other.
But you rubbed elbows with some of Comics Elite, man.
Yes. So plus a couple cute girls. That was cool.
There you go.
Now, what was your experience? I feel like I experienced a couple times, not including this podcast. What was?
I mean, I totally agree with the thick skin element, where it was just like, okay, I have to just kind of realize that I'm not going to sell much, you know, because I was admittedly pretty surprised that I didn't sell a single print.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was thinking like two or three.
I too was surprised.
What's that?
I was surprised as well that you didn't get anything.
Yeah, like, and even when I was like, because like I cut my prices on Sunday. I was like, look, you know, it's gonna be, you know,
what does old Gil gotta do to make a sale?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, what do I gotta do? Like, that was becoming like really absurd and funny with the spike. It's like the spike drawing was literally $10, and it was like that for the whole weekend. And Ray was 15. I did Ray from Star Wars Episode 7. Which also got some people interested, but
yes.
But it's like, you know.
what was your emotional roller coaster? Was it as fraught as I?
I don't think so, because I think at that point I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy that I'm here, and I'm going to just try and like talk to people, yeah. You know. And I mean, and granted, yeah, like, I mean, I eventually got commissions and stuff. Which definitely raised my spirits, because it's like, oh shit, people actually want to pay money for my stuff. That's cool. That's always nice to know.
I'm sure that is a comforting thought.
Hey man, people buy issues of Skeleton Bay. Just saying.
I know. Do you feel like you rubbed elbows well?
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
are your elbows well rubbed?
I mean, it's cool, because it reminds me of, like, I went to Akron Comic Con. I've been to Akron Comic Con twice, and in my home state of Ohio. And I had this really fun experience where you have Chris Prowse, who did, like, Tom Strong. I think he did a recent Thor's book, and I think he did some stuff with Grant Morrison in D.C. And he remembered me. You know, I probably said this story several times on Geeks at Large, but he remembered me. And, you know, you go back, you know, and the same effect happened at Heroes Con, where you had like Chris Schweitzer, who does like the Krogan series and lots of all ages books and stuff like that. And he remembered me. And of course there's Trad. Like, this is the third time I've interacted with Tradmore. And, you know, it's kind of, it's like you were talking about with pennies in the bank. It's like, he knows me. He recognizes me. I don't have to be like, hey, Trad, it's me, you know, I'm so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember you. It's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, we're actually acquaintances, kind of, like, you know.
Not exposition-heavy introduction level.
Exactly. You know, and it just, like, you know, it's just, I think at one point I just realized, like, you know, just to have fun and talk to people, which is really the best part of any con, is just talking to people. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's networking. Like, any con should have some level of networking in it. And, you know, even just, like, it's like Inception. You just want to, like, have that little Inception moment where you place in their minds who you are and what you do. Yeah. And hopefully it grows. So, you know, and...
Money, pennies in the bank.
Pennies in the bank.
In consequence, yeah. In conclusion, pennies in the bank.
Yeah, and I think I had a lot more fun, too, because it's like a SCAD reunion. You know, yeah. I hadn't seen Brittany since graduation.
Oh, yeah?
So that was fun, yeah. And, you know, I had friends like John Golden, Casey Garza... Corin Howell, you know, all these SCAD kids, and it's like, you know, I hadn't seen them in, well, Corin I had seen like a year ago at Heroes. That's where we first met. But then it's like, now we're friends, you know, and that's cool because she's done stuff. Like, she has the Mighty Zodiac with Oni right now, and she did Batmite. And it's like, she was one of the first people I saw when I went into the convention center on Thursday to set up, and she, like, just, like, came out of nowhere and hugged me. And it's like, oh, shit, we're, like, on this level now. This is great. Like, you know, you kind of, like, reassess your priorities in a way. Like, that's what I felt like I did. Is, like, you know, yeah, it's a bummer that I didn't personally sell much individually. But it's great that we sold Skeleton Bay stuff. I did sell Crimson Cat mini comics, you know, eventually. And I got to hang out with a bunch of people. I got to meet people in person that I talked to online. And you kind of absorb this atmosphere, you know, especially like when you first get there before the doors open for the public, and you can just kind of walk around and just like talk to people, you know, and it's just the creators and just like the exhibitors and stuff. So it's like, it proves to the person you're talking to, like, yeah, you're here because you're a creator. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I was looking forward to and experienced, was that there's a different conversation to be had as a fellow creator mm-hmm. than there is when you're just an attendee.
Right.
That, you know, that was something that, like, that's why that was something that I was excited about going in, was because, you know, as someone who'd been to conventions but only, you know, kind of as an attendee or like as an employee of a company, you don't really get, you can't really network in the same way.
Right.
That you kind of, there is the table between you is kind of a barrier. And so that was something that was cool, was to be able to talk, you know, to have a different, like, different conversation starters, you know, that, like, oh, where are you tabling, is always the beginning of the conversation. And that's just sets a different tone than, oh, I'm a big fan of your work. I read all your comics.
You know? Yeah. You're no longer the customer. You're the peer.
Yeah.
And it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All in all, a very, valuable trip.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm, you know, seriously contemplating going to Akron Comic Con and tabling this year, seeing if I can peddle any prints at all. I might actually invest in like a banner.
Yeah.
You know, cause I will just have to drive.
Yeah. I think that'd totally be valuable.
Yeah. So yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, and I definitely want to do, I want to, you know, look into doing C2E2 next year.
Yeah. I don't think they have the info yet, but
yeah, cause I had checked and it was like there's no openings in C2E2. I'm like, yeah. Really? Or does that just mean that they haven't opened it up for next year yet?
Next year. Yeah.
Well, you gotta keep me in the loop for that. Let me know. And obviously Heroes, like, and I think the best thing you can take away from it is that it makes me want to make comics, you know, like, and that's what you want. Like, you don't want to come out of a con and be like, oh, I'm so drained, I don't want to work, you know? But yeah. It does exactly the opposite. You talk with all these like-minded people. You even get to talk to these customers that might actually become really excited about your work and start following you, you know? So it really kind of, it's invigorating in a sense.
The funny that you mentioned that you want to make more comics, because I have plenty of skeleton-based scripts that you can have and turn into comic book pages.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
That's the type of enthusiasm that will really take this project and really...
I don't know. Maybe.
Jet fuel that really takes us off the launch pad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jet fuel. What is this? 9/11 truthers or some shit? What?
That's the kind of the 11th hour twist to Skeleton Bay.
It's all about 9/11 truthers.
That's the big secret to Skeleton Bay, is that it's that 9/11 was an inside job. Yeah.
If you look at the Kickstarter page and you like take a screenshot and you rotate it. Like counterclockwise, like 90 degrees. All the gaps magazine. In lettering spelled 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah. Yep. The truth is out there. Listeners of this podcast. The truth is, that's the takeaway. Is that life is meaningless and the truth is out there. And 9/11 is an inside job.
I wanna believe.
Yeah. I wanna believe. Is that, I don't know what the tone is. What was the tone that he said that in? Was that I want to believe? Or like, I want to believe.
I want to believe.
Dot.
That'd be a great, like, acting exercise. Like, say I want to believe in as many different ways as possible.
Yeah. Oh, that exists.
Yeah.
As someone who is an actor.
Well, there you go, Cameron. You got to make a demo reel of you just saying, I want to believe in various ways.
I want to believe. Yeah.
All in the high-pitched voice.
I want to believe.
Yeah. I feel like you're like in the middle of a chorus to a song that like...
Believe so hard. You got to touch them stars. You gotta believe in those things. 9/11 was an inside job.
This is like a preview of the new Kanye song, right?
Yeah. That's actually my remix of hitherto unreleased Kanye song.
Kanye West, 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. That probably is the signal to wrap this
that's
up.
That's a strong ending, don't you think?
Yes.
All right.
Well,
I'll leave you with this. This is something I meant to begin the conversation with, but I will end with this, is that there's a tweet that I saw earlier today that was something to the effect that it's that men... It's funny that men give women so much shit for being the one, being so talkative when men get together and have 45-minute podcasts that nobody listens to.
There you go.
So I'll leave you with that sentiment.
And we're almost like, you know, double that.
I thought it's salient. Yeah. We've surpassed that.
We have doubled 45 minutes. So that means even more people will listen to us.
Even more arrogance. Yeah.
Yep.
So
thank you, Cameron, for joining me on this latest episode of Geeks at Large.
It was my pleasure.
Yes, and hopefully we can get some kind of regular thing going on here where it's not like 2 months in between episodes, but we'll see. But for now, Cameron, myself, and everyone else at Geeks at Large will remain at large.